Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 4, text number 34. Tadviri pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadeksyanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Furthermore, the path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help one lead to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and observed inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind towards the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Tadvidi pranipatena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Namo Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tunamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskadya De Sitarana. Here Srila Prabhupada begins by pointing out that the path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. He doesn't say it's very easy. Although the process in itself is easy, but to apply it is difficult. It's an easy process, but the application of which is difficult. Therefore, the Lord advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord himself. So this is Krishna's advice, that because it is difficult, we can't do it by ourselves. Just like the learning of medicine is difficult. Therefore, it's advised, if you want to become a bona fide doctor, then you have to approach someone who knows medicine. So, the original spiritual master is Krishna, and a person in the disciplic succession, he can represent Krishna. That one can become a spiritual master by his own process. That one has to follow the authorized process, that is authorized by Krishna, and then one can actually properly convey the message of the Lord as it actually is. Therefore it says, dharma, dharmam tu sakshat pranitam. Bhagavat Pranitam, that the path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Path of religion means the law is the material nature. It is not that by our philosophy we can change the laws of nature. By our philosophy we can understand what the laws of nature are. And the creator of the laws of nature are the Supreme Lord Himself. Therefore, if we want to understand what the laws of nature are, we have to hear from the Lord or from the Lord's representative. Therefore, it says, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot lead one to the right path. So, it is not by our philosophical speculation or trying to figure things out by the scientific approach or by our own intuition that we can actually understand things as they are. Nor, as it says here, by an independent study of books. Any more than any other science can be learned independently simply by studying the books. Although they have home study courses where supposedly you learn everything at home, but still no one will become a surgeon by studying his courses at home. It is not that you have your diploma in surgery at home and therefore you start operating on people. That to become actually expert in some science, one has to see how an expert scientist applies the science. Therefore, in India, we'll find that often one learns the trade not by going to school and learning the trade, but simply by observing how someone, his father or some other person, applies the trade, and one learns the same trade by practical experience. So studying books may help us, but nor by independent study of books, Prabhupada says here, of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. That one has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. So, Krishna has pointed out later on, or points out later on, Nirmana Moha, Jita Sangha Dosha, or Amaritvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shantir, Arjava. That our first business is to become humble. Of course, this is not very much appreciated by modern society, which stresses that everyone should become independent. That by your will, you can make your mark on the world, and therefore you should not become humble, or if you have some defect, don't admit it. Don't admit that you do anything wrong. Just act as if everything you do is divine. Put on a good show and that will get you ahead. Think positive, and that you can change the whole world just by your thoughts. So modern society stresses one's independent will to be able to change things, and therefore especially one should feel confident and proud of his accomplishments, etc. But here it says that one can't learn anything unless he's humble. If one thinks he knows everything, then he won't bother listening. Because if he thinks he knows something, then why should he listen to anyone? Because he's just wasting his, he'll think I'm wasting my time. Only if one has the proper attitude of humility that one can actually learn something. Then one will be willing or anxious to hear in proportion to how much one is convinced that someone knows something that one doesn't know of value. Therefore, the first business in spiritual life is adambitvam, becoming humble. But what is this nirmana, moha? What is this nirmana or mana caused by, this attachment to pride? It's caused by moha or illusion. That everyone misidentifies themselves with their body or gross and subtle, and therefore they think that they have some special quality. They have something that no one else has, and therefore they have something to be proud of. And especially in this age, Prabhupada once said that every pauper is proud of his penny. That no matter how low our situation is, we're convinced that we're something special. Prabhupada gave the story of King Indra. One day, King Indra was cursed to become a pig. And so he was sent to the earth planet, and he had his wife pig, and he had his piglets, and he was very much attached and proud of his family. So, the administration of the heavenly planets was in some difficulty, disorganization. So Brahma came and asked Indra, please come back to the heavenly kingdom. But Indra said, no, how can I do that? I have my nice family, I have so much responsibility, I cannot give it up. So Brahma, he took his sword and cut off his wife's head, his children's head, and then went to cut off Indra's head as a pig. So Indra changed his mind and decided to come back to the heavenly planets. So in this material world, no matter how degraded our situation is, somehow or another, we become very proud of ourselves and our situation, misidentifying ourselves with this body, and therefore becoming proud of whatever attributes or qualities we have, thinking that we are the possessor and the enjoyers of these qualities and attributes. So one has to become free from this pride, and the only way of becoming free from that pride is by becoming a servant of the servants of Krishna. That if one realizes Krishna, how great Krishna is, then naturally one will see how small and insignificant one is. To realize Krishna's unlimited qualities, especially his beauty, his knowledge, his strength, his fame, his wealth, his renunciation, to realize his six opulences, then this will actually make one humble. So that's realized by serving a spiritual master in full surrender. That is, that the orders of the spiritual master should not be taken as something relative, that I like him because he tells me to do things that I like to do. That one should be prepared to follow the orders of the spiritual master without hesitation. Prabhupada explained in the second chapter under the verse, Vyavasayatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana vahu shakayanantascha buddhi av yavasayina. So, service in Krishna consciousness is best practiced under the able guidance of the spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Krishna and who knows the nature of the student and can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. So not only one has to obey the order of the spiritual master, but one has to be firm about it. Not that he told me to do it, I didn't really want to do it, but I got to do it, so... You know, excuse me, sir, could you take this book? I don't really want to give it to you. I don't really think you should give anything for it. But, you know, they told me to come out here and do it. So I guess what can I do? You know, they told me to surrender. I mean, I'm doing it the best I can. You know. Could you take, get out of here? No, I knew it. You know, this process doesn't work. These people don't want the book. I didn't want to come out here in the first place. But if one acts firmly in any circumstance, sir, excuse me, take this. All right. Then one will see the result much more, then one gets a much more favorable result as long as one is actually following a bona fide instruction. So one has to act firmly, one has to understand clearly what is the order of the spiritual master and then apply it firmly and obey it completely. And then not only obey it completely, but one should identify himself with the mission of the spiritual master. It's not that, you know, my spiritual master has a mission, I'll serve him for some time, but really my interest lies somewhere else. That really I have another psychophysical nature than that of my spiritual master, and therefore I'll carry on his mission for some time, but, you know, when he leaves me alone, then I can really get into my real mission that I have. So one should identify himself entirely with the mission of the spiritual master, and one should serve that mission. He should make it his life and soul. Not that my spiritual master has some interest, but I identify myself somewhat with his interest, but then I have some other interests too. The more one becomes identified himself as a sincere servant of the spiritual master, then the more he makes progress in spiritual life. That no one goes back to Godhead with some other interest other than the interest of his spiritual master in Krishna. Therefore, satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. So how much do we satisfy the spiritual master? We have to be prepared to completely satisfy the spiritual master. Not that I worked so hard, I did so many things, you know, he should be satisfied by now, and now I can do what I like. Because after all, you know, I mean, how much, what do you expect of a conditioned soul? Therefore, one has to understand what is the desire of the spiritual master. So how does one understand the desire? Here it says, inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. That one has to be jignasu or inquisitive. That one should be interested in understanding the science of devotional service. So, of course, you may say, well, you know, how do I inquire? I don't have any questions. But at least if one comes to class and tries to open it, it tries to hear, then that is also a sign of inquisitiveness, trying to hear. And submission means that one has to be prepared to follow what he hears. Not that here comes some sound vibration, I don't want to hear that one. You know, let me not hear that. That would really, you know, that part, that much surrender I can't really do. Therefore, it's better off not to hear it, to let my mind drift away for a few minutes. So, in lesser submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. So we have to be inquisitive. We have to want to understand what is the science of Krishna consciousness. But unless there's submission, unless one has the proper attitude to hear, and then after inquiring and hearing, unless one is prepared to follow what he's heard, there's no effect. So if someone is in Krishna consciousness for some time and he feels like there's no effect, then it's one of two things. One, it doesn't have a submissive enough attitude, or he's not actually following what he's heard. He's not applying it in his life. So, not only that, but one also has to pass the test of the bona fide spiritual master. It's not that I can do anything I want, and my spiritual master will keep on giving me instructions. That I have to actually follow his instructions, and then he'll give me more instructions. Just like if a student is going, let me learn, if the teacher is teaching the student, 1 + 1 = 2, and the student keeps on saying 3, then it's very unlikely the teacher will say, all right, enough of that. You couldn't learn 1 + 1 = 2. Let's go into trigonometry and advanced algebra. See how you do there. No, one has to, first of all, the spiritual master has to see that one has learned the Krishna consciousness to some degree, and then he'll begin to instruct on a higher level. But when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. So we should not only just follow whatever the spiritual master says, and that's famous stories that we've all heard before, but I'll just say it again, at least one of them, about the spiritual master. He had 5 disciples. So Hoja Maharaj once told us in the class. And the 5 disciples are very faithful disciples. Unfortunately, they didn't have much intelligence. So, at least one of the stories was when the spiritual master was riding on a horse. And he had a big turban on. And the 5 disciples were falling behind him. So when the spiritual master, he was riding along, one branch hit was overhead, and the turban hit the branch and fell off. And so the spiritual master looked around after they rode for a little while and said, where's my hat? And the disciple said, well, Guruji, you never told us to pick it up. We only do what you tell us. He said, look, you fools. go back there and get the hat. So they all run. Yes, Guruji, whatever you say, we're completely surrendered to you. So they all went back and got the hat. They said, look, fools, rascals, if anything falls off from this horse, you pick it up, all right? Yes, Guruji, we're surrendered, whatever you want. So they're riding up along a little further, and as you all can figure out, the horse started to pass stool. And the disciples said, well, Guruji told us to do it. So they all started to gather up the stool and carry it along with them. So then they were riding a little further, and the spiritual master's hat fell off. They said, oh, very nice, now we can put all the stool in the hat. So he said, where's my hat? And he said, here, Guruji. So he put the hat on, all the stool fell all over him. You rascals, you asses, you stupid. Guruji, we're just following your instructions. We're just completely surrendered to you. Look, fools, I'll make a list. And if anything is on this list, you pick it up. And if it's not on the list, you just let it go, whatever it is, all right? Yes, Guruji, we'll follow your orders exactly, whatever you say. So they're riding along, and a horse starts to pass stool, and they say, well, it's not on the list. So they didn't pick it up. And the spiritual master's hat fell off, so they picked it up. And then the horse is riding along a little fast, and there's one branch lying overhead, and the spiritual master hit his head against the branch and fell off unconscious. And they checked the list and said, he's not on the list. We can't disobey his order. And so they left him there and kept on walking with the horse. So this is an example of blind following. That one should learn to use his intelligence properly. And of course, one shouldn't absurd inquiries. Guruji, you know, what kind of, you know, dinnerware does Lord Brahma wear or use when he's eating prasadam, when he's listening to the Gandharvas? Do you know? You don't know that? I thought the spiritual master is supposed to know everything. I'm becoming a little doubtful. What was the name of the red incarnation in the Sweta Yuga, the Sweta Millennium? You don't know that? So absurd inquiries are condemned, that one should hear, not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but the whole idea is to get a clear understanding from him. We have to understand the science clearly by submission, service, and inquiries. So, a bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the disciple is always submissive and is ready to render service, then the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries become perfect. So, our qualification is that we have to become submissive and we have to be prepared to render service. That is, we have to be sincere and serious. And then, when we try to understand something, when we try to get a clear understanding of something, then automatically it will come because of the proper service attitude. Otherwise, if one is actually sincere and serious to serve Krishna, the idea is that Krishna will always help one. Just like if we pray to Krishna, please give me understanding what to do, if we're actually submissive and we're actually desirous of rendering service, then Krishna will undoubtedly give us the answer to our inquiry. But we find that the scientists, they're not very submissive sometimes to Krishna, nor do they actually want to render him service. Just like Vrikasura, he spent 1 year cutting off his flesh and throwing it into the fire, hoping to get a benediction from Lord Shiva, which would be detrimental to everyone. So the demons, sometimes they also want to get the answer to their inquiries, but Krishna makes it difficult, because actually they're neither sincere nor submissive. They're neither submissive nor do they actually want to render service to Krishna. They want to render service to demoniac propensities. Therefore, Krishna, as Narada Muni told Vrikasura, don't bother approaching Vishnu because he's not going to answer your inquiries. He doesn't do that. because unless you actually become submissive to him and actually become desirous of rendering him service, he's not going to answer your inquiries. So he advised him to approach Lord Shiva. So if we actually want knowledge about Krishna, we want to make progress in devotional service, we have to become submissive to Krishna's representatives and at the same time be willing to follow their instructions. Otherwise, our desire to understand Krishna consciousness will not fructify. So we'll stop there. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Well, everyone is an individual, so everyone has to be treated individually. But generally, those who live in the temple should be willing to follow the temple program, because that's the whole reason of living in the temple. It's not a place for a vacation. It's a place, therefore Prabhupada, one time he wrote, that before living in the temple, one should be willing to follow the rules and regulations. Otherwise, you shouldn't move into the temple. But if someone's already in the temple, it's undoubtedly the duty of the authorities to do what's necessary to see that people actually follow the program. If you go into a hospital, they expect that you're going to take the medicine and follow the proper diet, because it's the proper hospital. They expect that. And if you're not willing to do that, then they do the necessary. But this is a voluntary society, therefore we can't force anyone to do anything. So we can try to convince people by logic and reason, and maybe by little social pressure, to do the right thing. But ultimately we can't force, because then people will just go away. But in any case, it's up to us personally to try and do the right thing, and not to worry about everyone else so much. Because we can't. Even Krishna doesn't interfere with the free will of the individual living entities, so what to speak of ourselves? We have no power to do that. So people can be inspired by a good example and by logic and reasoning, but force can be applied a little bit in the beginning, but ultimately it can't be the only thing by force. It's like a father comes home and sees his son and holds a gun at his head and says, "All right, listen here, son. You know, we have a relationship, but ultimately you better love me or else I'm going to blow your head off." "Sure, father, whatever you say." "I love you quite a bit." So that type of force is not very beneficial. There's a certain amount of force, but ultimately everything has to be done voluntarily. Anything else? Yes. Well, the spiritual master has to be patient. Just like Jadvara's father was very patient.
He couldn't even teach him how to put the sacred thread on properly or to chant the Gayatri Mantra. But he tried repeatedly to instruct him how to be clean, how to this and that, how to follow instructions, but he couldn't do it. So it's the duty of the disciple. He has one duty, and the spiritual master also has a duty. But ultimately, everyone gets benefited by if they properly perform their service. So if the spiritual master is patient, just like Maharishi Shabdev also said, Guru nasasyat, svajano nasasyat, pitur nasasyat, svajano nasasyat. That one should not become father or mother or spiritual master or teacher or worshipable demigod unless he's prepared to liberate his disciple. So just like a mother, she has to be patient. So she may be seeing her child learning to walk and she encourages him. Not that if he falls down, she kicks the little guy. He goes, you rascal. You're never going to be able to walk. No, he makes little progress. She becomes encouraged. So at the same time, the child has to learn to walk on his own. So he has to try. So in the same way, the spiritual master has to patiently try to guide the disciple. And if the disciple is fortunate, he's sincere, then he'll sincerely try to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Yeah. What's that?
Is the spiritual master who let us accept the process of Krishna consciousness, or is the process of Krishna consciousness let us accept the spiritual master? We follow the process because of how we can accept the spiritual master, or the other way around.
Well, our acceptance or rejection of the process depends upon many factors. Principally is our own free will, utilizing it proper or not. The process is there, and the spiritual authorities are there. But ultimately, how sincere we are to follow or not to follow will determine whether we accept the process or not. In other words, we have our free will either to accept Krishna as he's appearing before us in different ways. Especially this movement is a manifestation of Krishna. Therefore, it's up to us to accept how Krishna is appearing before us as this movement. Or if we don't want to accept how Krishna is appearing before us as this movement, then we'll naturally choose to misidentify ourselves with this body and mind for sense gratification. So ultimately, there may be different factors, such as how realized other devotees are, and how nice the prasadam is, and whether I have a nice, comfortable room. So many material factors. But ultimately, it's up to us whether we accept Krishna or not. Krishna may not always appear before us in a way that may be appreciable for us at that moment. But still, if we have enough intelligence, if we have enough past pious activities, then we'll accept it. And by accepting the process, naturally we'll accept the people within the process gradually. Not only the spiritual master, but we'll accept gradually we'll accept the devotees. And we'll accept the process too. Now we accept this body and mind. So now we have to change accepting the body and mind as an authority to accepting Krishna as the authority and Krishna's representatives. Anything else? Yes.
Sometimes at least they think that they would come and realize and they start to understand that, you know, Krishna is land between some different ways and more also. And sometimes they feel that
Well, people have this idea that you have to become more liberal and accept the real liberal, you know, Krishna's manifest himself in the Christian church or in the amongst the Muslims, and therefore why shouldn't you eat meat? Why shouldn't you have illicit sex and take intoxication? You know, Krishna so kindly appeared in religions that embrace these, therefore why be so strict? But we can see how much Krishna has manifested himself in these particular present day religions, because even leaders can't follow. So if Krishna was so much present there, then why are they so attached to sense gratification? What's the difference between being a religious person and just being a common person on the street? If you do the same things as the common person on the street, and there's no distinction. So the test of how much Krishna is manifesting would be revealed by how much knowledge you have about this, about Krishna, and of how much vairagya, detachment from sense gratification, you have. And if you don't have any of these things, then how can you claim Krishna is manifesting? And if the followers aren't following Krishna's instructions, they don't even know what they are, what to speak of following them, then how can you say there's any love there for Krishna? You don't even know who Krishna is. So, people can say anything. But that, just like Prabhupada in One Morning Walk, he was saying, one devotee asked Prabhupada, the Christians say that Jesus, God speaks through me to me from my heart. And then Prabhupada said, what is the qualification for one to, for God to speak to one? Do you know? And the devotee said, well, Prabhupada said, what verse? I said, well, and Prabhupada said, Tesham Satadam Yukdanam Vajantam Vritti Purvakam Tadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yena Mam Upiyantite. That for those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, then I give them the understanding by which they come to me. So, unless one has a process by which one is constantly engaged in serving Krishna, following his instructions, and doing it enthusiastically, then there's no question of understanding Krishna. Anything else? If he's devoted to what? I mean, what was Uddhava saying? What was Krishna saying? If someone doesn't know me or who I am, that if he's devoted, then I'll reveal myself to him. Even if Krishna did say that, he doesn't mean a Shyama Sundar. I mean, when you say devoted, just like Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that if you work selflessly in some activity, then you make some progress. You know, just like if you serve the Red Cross or something, work without any desire for the fruit of action, then you'll make some progress. But that's a long way from realizing Krishna. There's no question of Krishna fully revealing himself just because everyone's devoted, generally to the wrong thing, though. So if one happens to devote himself to some benefit cause, and he gets some pious activity to his credit. Because it's the progress. The first thing is, Prabhupada explains, is that one has to follow some regulative religious process, regulate the senses, and then one should act piously, then become free from sinful reactions. Then one can cultivate knowledge about the absolute truth. And then eventually come to meditate upon the absolute truth in trance. And it's in that trance, meditation, that one can realize Krishna. So just doing some pious activity is a long way from actually meditating in trance on the Supreme Lord. Although it's a state. Yeah.
Also, the religions
compassion for the Blessed Lord. And then from that point of view, from the level of time, Krishna.
Long way away. Better to take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness. There's an indirect process of approaching Krishna, but there's also the direct process of just engaging in Krishna's service. That's a much easier way. Although understanding the indirect process may be helpful, still it's the direct process which is emphasized. For instance, the hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, remembering Krishna, these things will automatically elevate one. On the other hand, just trying to be religious is not very helpful. And of course, we should understand these things, but not that we ourselves should suddenly start planting trees along the pathways, as a pious act, digging wells, helping little old ladies across the street as Sankirtan. That's not our business. Our business is to give people the highest benefit by directly engaging them in Krishna's service. As far as being tolerant and not disturbing people, you know, then we can appreciate whatever people are doing that's positive, but not that we ourselves are going to take up that activity. As a tactic, we can sometimes appreciate, because that's all people, most people can't do that. We can't come directly to the path of devotional service. Therefore, we should encourage them, at least by following an indirect process, of gradually coming to this platform of understanding what is Krishna consciousness. But if a person's ready to accept the direct path, then he should be encouraged also. Not that it's so great, you know, that you're following the indirect path, that your path is as good as mine, and we all have the same path ultimately, and all goes to the same place, and, you know, whether you're a devotee or, you know, practically a demon, it doesn't really matter because we're all going to the same place eventually anyhow. So that kind of wishy-washy preaching is useless. One should be convinced that the path of devotional service is the only auspicious path, especially in this age of Kali. But others who take to an indirect path, they, by following that, hopefully one day they'll come to understand that. So therefore we don't want to disturb them unnecessarily. But we should not equate devotional service with any kind of mundane activity, however auspicious it may appear to be. Yes. What is that path? Who knows what that path is? What is the path? But to speak of following it, love thy neighbor as thyself, and, you know, obey the Ten Commandments. Yeah, it'll certainly elevate oneself. You know, if people stop engaging in adultery, they stop killing animals. If they start being, you know, if they started being human beings, it would actually help. Yeah, we encourage people to follow that path if they actually are following it. Of course, the Bible is so mixed up that it's very hard to really get a clear understanding of what the path is by reading the Bible. And most of the leaders of the Christian church, of any kind of faith, they themselves are quite confused and don't follow very strictly even what they understand. Very difficult. But we don't want to discourage people, because that's not very useful either. At least Christianity has kept human society more or less closer to the human form of life than the animal life. Because you can't do that anymore. But previously, people actually used to be, used to accept one wife. You know, they used to, they didn't kill so many things, etc. But now, the real religion is scientific knowledge that has replaced all kinds of religions. And now people's faith is in science. And science says that all you are is a bunch of chemicals, and that the real goal in life is just to gratify your urges, whatever they are. And whether it means killing things or annihilating things or exploiting things, it doesn't really matter, because that's really your duty. That's real religion, the sense gratification. You know, at least the Christian church, to a certain extent, says that you're supposed to obey the law of God, because they've compromised themselves. Most churches have compromised themselves to the extent where they also say that sense gratification is a good thing, that it's dangerous not to have sense gratification. It's bad for the mind and the body. Therefore, they're very confused. Most religions are very confused. What is religion? What's that?
So it's very difficult to
pray
for something,
Yeah, of course it's very difficult. Because in the Bible they have all kinds of ridiculous interpolations. They've added so many things to the Bible. You know, you can say that, well, it says you shouldn't eat meat. You know, John the Baptist was a vegetarian, Jesus Christ is this. And then they'll say, well, in the Bible it says that, you know, Jesus Christ brought down some sheep and had all these animals in him, and he said, eat, it's all good, just eat anything. So there's always some passage in the Bible that they can find or point out to that says, just eat anything, it doesn't really matter, it's all clean. It's not what goes into your mouth that counts, it's what comes out. So eat anything and just say sweet words afterwards, and it's all right. So you can find any nonsense understanding in the Bible. Yeah, of course. Partly that, and partly because people put these things in, they don't want to follow either. And these cheaters and the cheated, they seem to go together. Just like King Constantine, he had his wife, her name was, what was her name? Theodora. So, previously, in the Christian church, at that time there's the Eastern Church and then there's the other church. The other church, the regular church, was by far larger. And they were mostly followers of persons such as Origen, who had the doctrine of reincarnation, as well as most of the other early Christian leaders have held the doctrine of transmigration of the soul. But when they elicited Constantine to become the head of as the emperor of Rome, and he converted to Christianity, his wife didn't like the doctrine of reincarnation, because she was a big debauchee, and she thought that if I had to reincarnate and suffer for all my sinful activities, that would be very bad. So she was very much against the doctrine of reincarnation. So she in many ways tried to convince the bishop of Rome to change that edict. It was an edict which defended the doctrine of transmigration of the souls in the Christian philosophy or theology. So the first bishop refused to do that, and so they arranged him to be murdered. So they killed him off. Then they had his person was under him. They had him take charge, who was personally more or less put in that position by the Emperor of Rome, by Constantine. But after he became the head bishop of the church, the pope more or less, then he decided that he didn't like the idea of Theodora, and so they tried to get rid of him too. So then finally they called a council, and they invited all the bishops from the Eastern Church, and they invited only a handful of people from the regular church of Rome. because all the Eastern Church, they didn't like the, most of the bishops there, they didn't like the doctrine of reincarnation, although they were small in number. So then they had a council of Constantine, and they took out the doctrine of reincarnation in some ways, and made an anathema that anyone who believed in it would be killed, and it was taken out of all the Bibles at that time. All the Bibles were changed. Anything that had anything to do with the reincarnation of the Bible was taken out. And that, therefore, most of the Bibles that you have, the earliest ones, are from the dating from Constantine, because they destroyed all the other ones. And they killed anyone who protested. So, it's a nice way of having philosophy, changing philosophy, but even the Christians, they know that's their history, but they become... Most people don't know what the history is, and therefore they think, oh, there's no reincarnation in the Bible. Because maybe in the Bible you have now, there's no reincarnation. But that's because it was taken out. But to argue with the Christians on that basis generally just gets nowhere. So, but on the other hand, if someone says they're a Christian, I mean, there's no sense arguing with them. At least they're a Christian. If someone said, I'm a devout atheist, then of course we're not so much encouraged to hear that. Better that someone's a Christian, because it means at least they'll probably accept some bona fide instruction of Jesus Christ. And some are more sincere than others, too. Although it's rare to find someone who's actually sincere, but some of them are. Yeah.
In part of his argument, that he said, well, what you find is the incarnation of Krishna for this age, so everybody who's sincere in religion will have to join his movement.
Eventually, sure. Yeah, but we don't expect everyone to change their religion. Religion is the beginning of human life, practically speaking, following religious principles. And then they should act piously and conquer sinful reactions. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is not some sectarian movement, it's a science of love of God. So it can benefit everyone, whatever their religion is. It just gives one more in-depth study of the science of God. Previously, people weren't... When Jesus Christ came, he didn't come here to establish Christianity. He didn't teach Christianity. He taught the science of God. So this is the science of God. So if you're actually a sincere follower of Jesus Christ, this is a further study in the science of God. Why wouldn't you accept it? But if you're biased and you don't really want to understand the science of God, you have some other agenda, then of course you won't accept it. Because everyone is, there are different, one who knows more than we do, he can be accepted as a spiritual master. But representatives of Krishna themselves may be on different levels. Therefore Krishna says, Gyaninas Tattva Darshanaha, the spiritual master, the bona fide spiritual master, should, the best one is one who's actually seen the truth. And therefore, he also understands the nature of the disciple and can guide the disciple correctly. So, one who actually has transcendental realization, full or more, the most complete knowledge, or one who has more knowledge, then he knows how to properly engage his disciple in such a way as to make tangible progress in devotional service. But one with less knowledge, he may not be so clear on how to properly engage a disciple to make advancement. So it depends upon expertise. So there may be many medical practitioners, but not all of them, although they may be all doctors and bona fide, not all of them are equally expert at their practice. So generally one wants to go to the most expert practitioner, and then he'll most likely get the best result. Anything else? Yes. Yeah, of course. Two qualifications of the spiritual master. One is that he's realized the truth by strictly following his own spiritual master. And the second is the ability to establish relationships to convince others to do the same thing. That one may be a very advanced devotee, and he may not necessarily be an expert spiritual master in some respects. In other words, if what the most advanced devotee, he's naturally, he's expert of both parts. But someone may strictly follow, and he may not be so expert at establishing relationships and convincing others to follow. And others may follow not follow so strictly, but be very good at convincing others to follow. So the best person is one who not only follows strictly, but is also enthusiastic about convincing others to follow. Or as Sanatana Goswami told Haridasa Thakur, he said, some devotees, they preach nicely, but they don't follow very strictly. And some devotees, they follow strictly, but they don't preach nicely. But you do both. You not only follow strictly, but you also preach very nicely. Therefore, you are the best of all these devotees. Both. People can become attracted for different reasons. And we can't really pinpoint exactly why people become attracted. Ultimately, from the ultimate platform, everything is Krishna's energy, and therefore Krishna is attracting people in different ways. So the important thing is that ultimately, if one finds someone who's actually not only strictly following, but also is also preaching, of course, if one is strictly following as expected, that he'll also preach the same message. He doesn't add anything or subtract anything. So why someone becomes attracted, there may be different reasons. But still, one will find the bona fide spiritual master, his qualification is that he follows strictly and he preaches properly. Not necessarily. But one sense that most of us would never have heard about Krishna or have become any attractive if it wasn't for Prabhupada, either his books or his disciples or this movement. So Prabhupada has created the movement, he's written the books, he's trained his disciples. So in that way we owe a debt to Prabhupada. But, so most of us, who are in this movement have come because of Prabhupada. Well, if you can find one spiritual master, makes the process a little shorter. You just have to find one who's bona fide. Just like if you're you have cancer or some very serious disease, you generally just try to find one good doctor. If you think, well, I'm not really so sure who's the best doctor, and there are at least 10,000 doctors, I have to check them all out, that you'll probably be dead by the time you find the right doctor. Anything else? Yeah, that's Krishna's super soul. He guides us in all activities in devotional service, so he also guides us to someone who's bona fide. He gives us the ability to understand, to realize what's correct and what's not correct. If we're actually sincere, then he guides us to the right person. If we're not so sincere, according to our desire, Krishna guides us. Somehow or another, anyone who's in this movement, practically speaking, is acting as a spiritual master, he's repeating what Srila Prabhupada said, so therefore they're all bona fide. And they're acting according to what Prabhupada said. Now, even if there's some problems later on, they may even leave. But then they cease to be bona fide spiritual masters within our movement. But at least while one is acting within this movement as a spiritual master, then he's bona fide because he simply repeats what the previous acharyas have said. Therefore, anyone who accepts them, they make advancement. So we can say that Krishna is guiding one to the bona fide spiritual master if that's what one wants. Just as Krishna is guiding one, if one wants to find a good rock star to listen to, he also gives that guidance. So according to what we want, Krishna guides us. If you want, what is that, as you said this morning, give me a Jaya Jagadisha Hari, give me a wife, give me a car, give me a house by the sea, Jaya Jagadisha Hari. So Krishna will also help us in that way. Whatever we want. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.